Take a network break, steep a hot cup of tea, visualize the perfect virtual donut, and then grab a napkin and some silverware as we sample the bountiful buffet of this week's tech news. I'm your host, Drew Conry Murray, and joining me as always is my co-diner, Greg Farrow. Before we jump in the news, I want to thank today's sponsor. This episode of Network Break is brought to you by IT Pro TV. You can enhance your technology aptitude, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code networkbreak30. And thanks to ThousandEyes. ThousandEyes delivers visibility into every network your organization relies on, from your data center to the cloud. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root causes of network issues and then share your insights with your vendors and customers. Sign up for an account at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers to monitor 3 locations for free, and you can choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. And thanks to IT Pro TV and ThousandEyes for being a sponsor. Okay, getting to the news. Last week, we talked about new leaf switches from Arista, and we have a slight correction.
Yeah, so I sort of said some prefaced my comments about Arista speculating because the press release doesn't say whether they're based on Tomahawk or the new generation. And several people have been in contact, including Arista's PR team, stating that they're Jericho-based. Now, for those of you who don't know, Jericho is an advanced version of the Tomahawk. It's fundamentally the same silicon inside. It's just got some enhanced stuff inside. It's hard to explain, but same as what's being used in the recently announced 7500Rs. And that's where they get the extra features that you won't see in most of the Tomahawk stuff, is because they're using the more expensive and more advanced chipset.
So, all right, they're talking about deep buffers is the big feature release here with this one, right?
Yeah, deep buffers. And also, I guess the fact is that I missed last week and I'm still reading about it this week, is that this is actually meant to be a universal leaf. Like, the press release didn't quite explain this, or if it did, I missed it. They don't mention the silicon. Arista doesn't like to talk about the silicon that's inside its products, and they never mention it in the press release. So you either have to ask them or you have to speculate. So there's that. The second part is that this is meant to be a universal leaf. So where, say, for example, if you're Cisco, you've got one switch in each category. You've got one for campus, one for data center, one for top of rack, one for core, and each of those products is different in some way. This product that's just been released from Arista is meant to be a universal leaf. That is, it can equally be used for storage because it's got deep buffers. It can be used for top of rack because they've got this route compression capability. It can be used for campus, can be used for everything. And I think it's sort of an acceptance of the fact that one IU switches are the way forward. Cisco, the idea of having a chassis works for a very small number of customers. I think I've said many times that chassis switches aren't necessarily relevant to people going forward, unless you need a lot of switches in one place. But you could probably get better results by buying one IU and building an ECMP spine in the data center or in the campus, right? Especially if you use PON, you can build a really effective leaf spine using PON in the campus and get a lot of 10 gig, a lot of 25, 50, 100 gig with it for very little money, with a little bit of creative design on your part, without having to change your fiber, by the way, because PON allows you to hold on to stuff. So that's interesting to me in the sense that we've gone from having one switch for each purpose, and now Arista is saying they've released a leaf switch meant for ECMP that's useful for all different situations, storage, top of rack, spine use, the whole bit, make it work.
Okay, well, we got that cleared up. Very good. And thanks to Arista for reaching out for the clarification.
Yeah, and thanks for the grown-up behavior. Just reach out, let us know you did something wrong so we can come with retraction, as opposed to some companies who like to just, you know, make personal abuse on Twitter.
You be grown up, we'll be grown up, and we'll all be happy.
That's right.
Okay, last week we had mentioned a story about 4 high-profile Cisco execs who they were running Cisco's spin-in strategy. 3 were being moved to advisory roles, and the 4th, Sonny Giandani, was made head of the NCMe division. Well, we have an update there as well. All 4 executives have resigned from the company. Recode cites an internal memo from CEO Chuck Robbins that says there was a, quote, disconnect regarding roles, responsibilities, and charter.
This harks back to, remember when Cisco, when Chuck Robbins took over and we heard that the NCMe business unit wasn't reporting to Chuck, they were still reporting to John Chambers directly and weren't inside. And you've got to wonder if time has passed by and they've been told that they need to integrate with the bigger part of Cisco. So normally Cisco is multiple individual business units, and each one operates like a separate business. They don't. There's not a lot of cooperation between them. People often think there is, but there actually isn't. And NCEMI seems to be run very much like a fiefdom. That is, it's totally separate. It sucks resources out of Cisco, and then uses them to sell, you know, to make its numbers and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, you know, somebody sort of said you have to come in and participate in the rest of the business. And I wonder if the ACI people have said, no, we aren't part of the rest of the business. We're the future of the business. You should come and join us. And fundamentally, there's been a because this goes in parallel with there's a bunch of reorgs going on over the last 2-3 months. And the recent one is, of course, that the security business and the enterprise networking business have been merged into one team under one head of business line, which changes a lot of the political fault lines inside of the organization and reduces things. And if they didn't want to participate in that, I wonder if there's been a showdown. Now, this is all speculation. Mm-hmm. We don't know. I don't have any inside information, and even if I did, I wouldn't share it. But, you know, this is just very odd. These people have been highly praised, been significant figures inside of Cisco for a long period of time, and got whatever they wanted whenever they wanted it, and come up with products. And you know, internally, we've heard over a long period of time many stories that these people have been given a charmed ride all the way, and now all of a sudden the charmed ride stops, and then they throw their toys out the cot and quit. That doesn't sound right, does it?
What really struck me was the speed with which this happened. You know, it was a big announcement, a lot of talk about MPLS, that's the initials of these four folks, and, you know, how well-respected they were within the organization and all the innovation they brought to the company. And suddenly they're like, okay, we're out the door, see ya. it does, again, this is speculation, but it smacks of power plays and maybe hurt feelings or disagreements about what their roles would be.
I also have a question in my mind about how much money they're making for Cisco, right? So if you think that the company was bought 3.5 years ago for, you know, $850 million, plus there would have been a bunch of incentives, a couple hundred million in incentives. And then since then, they've been spending, you know, what, $100, $200, $250 million. So let's say it's somewhere between $1.5 and $2 billion has been invested in ACI. And now you've got a business which is selling, which they claim is doing a $2 billion run rate. That's $500 million a quarter. But what I can't make sense of is, how do you get to $500 million if you're selling software licenses? Mm-hmm. When you've only got 1,400 customers, or let's call it 2,000 customers, whatever you like, right? So I went off and scratched around in some documentation, and in the ACI launch documentation, they talk about they had 40,000 Nexus customers at the time ACI launched. Mm-hmm. So if you say that 40,000 customers, there's 2,000 now have, you know, ACI, there's 2,000, that means that's a 5% penetration into their existing customer base. So 3 years for 5% penetration for $2 billion spent to make $2 billion a year in revenue, I'm not entirely sure that those numbers are the sorts of things that Cisco was expecting. Like, was the board expecting this to be much more than it is? And maybe there's, you know, there's no one thing here. I suspect it's much more a complex thing. We've heard rumors about, you know, the spin-in, spin-out model being unpopular. Maybe that's a, you know, a black mark. And these people have been less than pleasant to many people inside of Cisco. I've heard constant rumors for a period of time that they're not nice people to work with. You know, maybe they've been changing or whatever. Who knows, whatever. But, you know, maybe it's just a cumulative thing in saying, you know, you either fit in or you don't. And they say, well, we don't.
You know, they've certainly got the market reputation. They can go out and probably do whatever they want now. So they're free agents.
You know, the question is, will they do a startup? Obviously been very successful doing the spin out. And maybe if, you know, people who do this sort of stuff are often quite ego-driven. They don't need to do it for the money. They do it for the ego. It could be interesting to see if they decide that they've got something to prove and they decide to do another startup and see how successful it is without the Cisco resources behind them, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. It would be very interesting to watch. Mm. It's sort of like real-life Game of Thrones, you know, these little hurt feelings and revenge ploys. And
yeah, well, hopefully this, you know, Game of Thrones model that Cisco's got, all the suggestions that we see is that that model's being dismantled. So that was the old John Chambers models, which was to have them all fighting with each other. And that was how you kept the company competitive. And that was a business model that came from General Electric in the 1980s, was you have all these business units doing similar things and then have them competing with each other, and that way you keep your competition high. And that's great when you've got 80% market share, but now that Cisco's down below 60% market share, that model might not be the right one. And all the signs are that Chuck Robbins is looking for a much leaner, much more integrated, you know, one product, one market type thing to cover that market as the profit margins shrink. You know, and that makes sense, because as the profit margins shrink, as the commoditization, as the white box comes through, why are you producing so many different pieces of Ethernet silicon when they're all pretty much the same thing?
Right. The external competitive landscape has certainly shifted over the last 10 or 15 years from where Cisco was just unquestionably the leader. And now I could totally see a change in business model where they say, all right, this internal competition worked when we were just crushing everyone. But now that we are under significant threat, it's time to unify as one company instead of little fiefdoms fighting each other.
Yeah. And keep in mind that Cisco's getting bigger at the same time. So, you know, I'm talking, focusing very much on the enterprise business, and then the enterprise business is shrinking. But Cisco has, you know, a business play going on in IoT, which is much, much larger than the enterprise market is in the long term. They're talking about IoT is going to be, you know, twice the size of the enterprise market within 3 to 5 years. They've already made a $1.2 billion purchase, Jasper. Right, that's bigger than ACI right there. And ACI's got Jasper's got way more customers and way more revenue than those sorts of, you know, that business unit. I think the executives want to put their focus into that, and they want to say, right, the enterprise stuff is whatever. It's a mature market. It's not going to change. It's doing good business. Just stop making that. That's not the focus anymore. That's the mature business. Take profits.
Uh-huh.
And if you're going to be painful about it, well, then that's just too bad. We're just going to simplify the business and move on. I suspect – now, that's, again, speculation, but that would be the way – You think a normal business would play it out, and normal business always seems to repeat the story. So that's why I would expect that.
Well, that's that idea of market maturation is a nice way to segue to our next story, which is Reuters reporting F5 Networks has hired investment bank Goldman Sachs to help the company evaluate acquisition bids. So here we've got another mature company deciding what its role is going to be in the tech market. One possibility is that a private equity company could come in and take F5 private. We've seen that happen with other tech companies. These companies are generating revenue, they're profitable, but their growth is stalling, and Wall Street doesn't like that. Then there's also, of course, potential tech buyers. SDX Central is reporting that some financial analysts are pitching HPE, IBM, Cisco, and Ericsson as potential acquisitions.
Yeah, it's hard to know where this is going to go. F5 seems to have stalled in terms of growth, so it's still got a $7.5 billion valuation. There's nothing wrong with the company. Do you know?
No,
what I mean?
Not at all. Right.
It's not on sale because it's having a crisis. There was, of course, the CEO, Manny Rivelo, resigned under a cloud recently. What this means for you and why I talk about these types of things is because these affect the products and the technology, right? Mm-hmm. If F5 is a mature business model and now it goes through a sale, then internally the organization starts to look inwards, and that affects what customer services, and that affects how products are developed or built on time. The general consensus is that there's no more growth in F5. It's reached the maximum value. It's penetrated as much of the market as it can reasonably take. There's no upside. So what does it do? Does it go into private equity and get refocused, or does it do something to buy some other businesses and put them together to change its business and grow maybe into a serious, more networking competitor, or abandon its enterprise roots and move much more into cloud-centric roots, or, you know, I don't know, something. So the question is, who's going to buy them? I mean, I'm struggling. I think it's going to be private equity. What do you think?
My feeling is private equity also. The companies that were mentioned, the companies that you would normally think of, I don't necessarily see them. Maybe HPE. I guess HPE doesn't really have a strong play in the ADC market, so that would fit a gap for them. And it is a mature, stable company with a great customer base. But otherwise, I think F5 has had a little bit of trouble transitioning to the software and cloud market, and that's where things are going. So private equity would be my guess as well.
Yeah, but I mean, so if you think about it, you know, like HP, IBM, Cisco, Oracle, Ericsson, Nokia, you know, those companies could buy F5. Would they be able to grow? So would they have to pay a premium for F5 to buy it, right?
Right, right.
So, but to make that value useful to you, you would have to be able to sell a hell of a lot more F5s in some way, or
that's
increase
right.
the selling price, or, you know, reduce the cost of producing the product so that you can take more profits. And I don't think any of those companies, who are all shrinking conceptually, you know, on the baseline of those results is that they're predicted to shrink, you know, small amounts, 1-5% for the next 3 to 5 years as cloud eats away at them and commoditization sweeps through the market, blah, blah, blah. You know, if HPE or Oracle was to buy F5, would they sell more F5? Or
right. That's why I think private equity is the way to go, because if you're not growing and you're a publicly traded company, you get punished by Wall Street. But if you are still profitable and you have a good business and you're actually making money, private equity can be the way to go because, hey, things are fine. You're not growing, but you're making money. You're profitable. You have a small amount of growth. Hmm. Private equity, that's the place to be, I think.
The concern for customers is F5 goes through this process and their staff and management take their eye off the ball and your product suffers. So
right.
If you're looking at F5 right now, maybe the time is to put some brakes on any purchasing while this process goes through. Maybe they'll go nowhere and just stay as they are, or maybe they'll be bought out and go to private equity, and then you'll have to go through the uncertainty of what they're going to do with that, because whoever buys it is going to have to do something to extract value from it, and that's going to change it in some way if it gets sold, yes.
Yeah, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that. We've got more news for you, but before we do, I just want to take a minute to tell you about our sponsor, IT Pro TV. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV, and with them, you gain access to the most important tools that you need to prepare for your IT certification. And Greg, you can tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, IT Pro TV is a great way of getting up on some new technologies. Now, you can certainly use IT Pro TV to prepare you for your IT certification, but one of the things that I do that a lot of people don't always think about is it's just a way of getting in touch. You want to have a wider skill base. And how do you learn new stuff without actually going to do a certification? So you don't have to dive in deep. Maybe you just want to brush across the top of what Docker is, or what does hacking look like, or what is, give me an introduction to cryptography. And IT Pro TV has like thousands of hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content. They're streamed on demand to your favorite video device, or maybe even on your smartphone at work. While you're at lunch, you can watch through a couple of modules of crypto or Metasploit and learn something. Changes the way you look at your networking and your technology. Mm-hmm. Now, course topics are wide across the whole thing, but with IT Pro TV, you get 100 step-by-step labs and transcend a practice exam. So if you are going down this path, you can do that. You get the whole thing for a low monthly subscription price with a no-hassle cancellation promise policies. You can just get in there, do it for a month, and if that doesn't work, then get the hell out.
All right. Well, you can check out itpro.tv/networkbreak to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year. We have a special offer, though. You can try it free for 7 days when you sign up using the code NETWORKBREAK30 to check out their courses, the live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. So that's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. So check them out. Back to the news. Greg, you flagged the Ericsson Mobility Report, and you found some things you wanted to talk about there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic report, the Ericsson Mobility Report. We've seen vendors as a way of doing PR, like Cisco's been doing its Visual Networking Index, and other companies, though, we have...
And Verizon does a big security breach report every year.
That's right. Verizon does a security breach report. One of the content delivery networks does a denial of service and secure internet security report. There's a bunch of them, and they're always great reading. They make me think... about how things are working, and then back it all up with numbers. But in particular, the Ericsson one really got me really interested because it actually draws conclusions from the data. So unlike some of the other reports which just say, you know, there's a lot of mobile phones, or the Cisco one which particular just sort of tries to create this, I always work away with a sort of a – they were trying to create fear, uncertainty, and doubt about how much more bandwidth there is, and you've just got to buy more assets. Now, sure, the Ericsson Mobility Report has part of that in it, but it's much more practical. But the one that – a couple of factoids I want to share with you, and this is one that just blew me away. The Internet of Things is expected to surpass mobile phones as the largest category of connected devices in 2018. Now, you're halfway through 2016, so they're predicting within 18 months there'll be more Internet of Things connected – as connected devices than there are smartphones in the world today in just 18 months' time.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And
especially when
graphs,
you consider the penetration of mobile phones, which I think they also call out. Mobile subscriptions are up to 7.4 billion in the first quarter of 2016. So that's a big number for IoT to catch up to and surpass.
You know, while we watch sort of like a sunset phase of enterprise networking as it compresses and, you know, becomes a lot simpler and less relevant going forward, this mobile networking, I think we're going to see a lot more networking professionals develop skills around 5G, you know, these new networks around how to connect to IoT, to the corporate network. How do you keep that secure? How do you get cloud? And this this report just gave me some stuff to think about. It gave me a sort of a sense of where the future looks for it. And, of course, it has the every you and I have done these reports over the years, and you've always got to have the feel-good piece. You know, you've got to find the fun piece that's sort of like a...
Right. A little treat
that can catch the headlines for the mainline media. The one I liked here was that they used the mobile phone backhaul and monitored the signals between the mobile towers as a way of monitoring the weather.
That's right. I saw that. That was really interesting. Instead yes. of it yeah. serves as like a sort of microwave, low power, very, very localized mm-hmm. weather detection system.
Well, yes, exactly. Because when you have water falling, when you have rain or fog coming out of the sky, and because the base stations themselves can have temperature sensors and wind meters and all that sort of stuff in them, but you can actually monitor the signal to measure how much rain was falling between two sites, because when right. the rain falls, you can use the signal loss to measure just how much rain. Anyway, they did a research program with a local university, and it was kind of like a really interesting idea that you can use mobile phone towers for very localized weather monitoring, which ultimately feeds into much more accurate weather reports, because if you can have a lot more data, real data on the ground, you can feed that back into your weather models. So big data, machine learning, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that was interesting. So there was kind of like that little feel good. I quite got a kick out of reading that piece.
That's right. And we'll have a link to the report in the show notes. It's free. You don't need to register. You can just go click it, download it, and start reading.
Hey, you don't have to sign.
Tip of the hat to Ericsson for that.
That's right. It's there for everybody to read. There's no sign up. There's no login, you know, no paywall.
Well, sticking with IoT, which we had talked about with the Ericsson report, HP and GE have announced an IoT partnership. HPE is going to be the preferred storage and service provider for GE's IoT PaaS product, which is called Predix, and that's aimed at industrial customers, of course. And in turn, HPE is going to make Predix its preferred PaaS platform for its own industrial IoT initiatives. Is this just sort of some friendly press release material, or do you think there's something more substantial here?
Well, this is dancing elephants, I think. When the big companies start to get together and form up these partnerships, because keep in mind, we've seen Cisco and GE sign partnerships, Cisco and Philips, Cisco and Johnson Controls, and you know, HPE has been very successful in getting network functions virtualizations into the carrier market. When the elephants dance, we all sort of, you know, hear the footsteps.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that the elephants are mating, so if you know what I'm saying.
So, I do know what you're saying, yes.
So
don't
this
know
does
that
make
any baby elephants will be produced from this.
That's right. So General Electric, of course, has a massive presence in manufacturing and industrial. They have huge business units that address those markets. And they've already built their own platform. So we talked a minute ago about how Cisco has Jasper, which is an IoT platform. This gives HPE the ability to partner with GE for that. And no doubt they'll be looking at getting their own at some point as well and deciding whether that goes ahead or not. But HPE gets to sell it what it has today. So keep in mind that a business should always needs to sell what it has now. So HPE becomes a preferred storage and server provider for this platform as a service. And that's going to be interesting. I do wonder, just what we don't see talked about here is that General Electric was one of these people who's invested in Cloud Foundry. And if I remember rightly, let me just look it up while I'm talking to you. Maybe they're using a Cloud Foundry or part of the Cloud Foundry platform to build this PaaS for IoT. So I think this sort of gives you a scale of just how big IoT is going to be.
Absolutely, and it's an opportunity for HPE to sort of start to tap into that market with a partnership with somebody like GE who's already there. Hmm. I think we also do need to note that the term preferred does not mean exclusive, so I don't think it's we're safe to say that they aren't locked in together mm-hmm. exclusively, but they're going to try to help each other out where they can. Where
so here is, I've just found an article, GE leverages Pivotal Cloud Foundry to build Predix, the first mm-hmm. cloud for industrial IoT. So I'm right. I took a punt there. So yes.
Pat yourself on the back.
Well, Cloud Foundry, I think, is going to be the dominant PaaS platform in the enterprise. It's certainly shaping up to be the Pivotal group, which is part of the EMC, which will be part of Dell, has done a great job of putting an open source product into the market and then putting, you know, commercial solutions behind that. And now that GE and Microsoft and a range of other people have invested into the Pivotal company, like literally bought shares in the company to make sure that it goes the direction they want it to be. But yeah, as soon as you say PaaS and then General Electric, I instantly thought Cloud Foundry, and yes, that's exactly what they've done.
All right, tip of the hat to
Greg. So you get a whole environment to start developing. So if you think now there's a platform, there's a PaaS, you know, start writing code on top of a platform, click it and deploy it, and it's all done for you. GE and HP have partnered to build that cloud platform.
Yeah, and definitely something else that we'll be keeping an eye on.
That's why AWS people should be worried, because that's what they do, right?
That's right. I'm sure they're looking at it. So we talk a lot about hyperscale on the show. Companies like Google and Amazon, they're having a significant effect on the networking industry as they're driving innovation in hardware and software. I found a report from a research organization that's called Intersect 360. They're saying hyperscale is now big enough to represent its own market apart from enterprise IT. One highlight of the report that it notes there are 10 companies that in total, just themselves, these 10 companies account for $20 billion annually in IT consumption. You can probably guess who those are: Google, Amazon, Alibaba, and so on. Mm. Hyperscale isn't just limited to those 10. There's others like Netflix and so on that aren't quite as big, but a second tier under. I'm curious if you see hyperscale as its own animal now, or is this just maybe a research company trying to carve out its own little market niche?
I do. I think that there's a sufficient divergence, not just in terms of volume. So, you know, we already knew that 20% of networking switches go to other, like, you know, other market, IDC and the IDC reports. So it's, and the same thing is happening in servers and CPUs and, you know, other data center technologies. We're also seeing them force technology change. So new 100 gig standards, new storage standards, APIs, you know, new CPUs that have got FPGAs in them are being built just for that market segment. Mm-hmm. Just for those customers. So it seems to me to make sense to say, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Azure, Fanga, like, you know, those are the companies, they've got very different needs to what enterprise IT wants or industrial IT wants. So why not? And it's big enough. It's 1/5 of the market. How big do you have to be? I mean, there are parts of the server market today, which they talk about, which are 5%. So why not? It's that big. They're certainly different enough, like their ability to iterate and throw stuff away. So they're spending big money and they're buying stuff so they can actually change the market. Whereas people like you and I with our, you know, storage arrays and arguing over whether we put more hard disks in or maybe should we buy an all-flash array, these people are way beyond that.
Right. And not only are they way beyond it, they're also driving the market with their demands. That's why we get things like the Open Compute Project, which was initially a Facebook initiative to actually drive change in not just how they buy material, but how that material is made, switches, racks, all that stuff.
Yes. Once upon a time, you would look for companies like Cisco and HP, you know, and Dell and so forth, and say that was where the technology innovation was happening. But now the innovation is happening upstream. And in a certain sense, the companies that we know are sort of being sidelined for that. Well, not sidelined. They've still got their market segments and plenty of revenue and plenty of whatever. But I think, yes, you know, the big cloud providers are diverging further and further from the enterprise IT. Like I was reading, there's a book that Google published recently called Site Reliability Engineering. And when you read that, you realize just how far away their thinking is, how divergent their thinking is to the way, you know, we think about it in the enterprise. It's just not the same at all.
So, but I think the reason it's relevant to our audience is that the things that these hyperscale folks are doing are actually coming down into the enterprise as well and affecting how enterprises can build and operate their own networks as well. So it's not just these rarefied systems that aren't going to touch our lives. It is actually working its way down to us too.
Yeah, I think very much so. So that we've talked about this before, where once you can prove something operating at scale, you can always scale it down and use it at a smaller scale in your own data center. So the challenges of things like Kubernetes was originally, you know, that Google pushed out. It's a no longer used Google technology that you can adopt in the enterprise that works. Doesn't work at Google scale, but you know what? For enterprises, it's way good enough.
That's right. You know,
as long as you can embrace containers, then having a cloud scale orchestration capability like Kubernetes, that's going to save you a lot of effort, a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So why not? Yes, we're going to get crumbs from those tables, and that's going to drive. So if you think about enterprise IT as following the market, then they're going to take assets that have been proven out in cloud that might be relevant to them, and then they'll be adopted by the enterprise. They're not going to be driving the market in a particular direction like we used to.
Another quick break for a sponsor message from ThousandEyes. As your network expands to include cloud services, ISPs, and third-party providers, visibility diminishes. That's a huge problem when you're running critical applications, websites, and services. And that's where ThousandEyes comes in. ThousandEyes gives you visibility into every network that your company relies on. That's your corporate network, the internet, cloud service provider network, all from one place. ThousandEyes Cloud agents are deployed in locations all across the globe, and enterprise agents provide additional visibility from within your own network. And together, these vantage points provide the most complete understanding of network topology, dependencies, and behavior. So with ThousandEyes, you can do things like piece together multiple layers of network insight from BGP routing and DNS to web servers and layer 3 performance. You can quickly pinpoint root causes of problems like device faults, DDoS attacks, and you can share that data and the insights with your vendors and your customers to help you resolve problems faster. And ThousandEyes has a special offer just for our listeners. You can sign up for a free account at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers, and you can get a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before. ThousandEyes, network intelligence you can see. Okay, back to the news. Fortinet announced that it is buying a CellOps. What's a CellOps?
Fortinet needs to get a bit bigger, and more importantly, it needs some application specifics. So the Fortinet firewall tends to conform to the traditional model of a firewall that most people think of. You know, box, Ethernet interfaces on two side traffic goes through. Over the years, they've added like IDS, but they tend to follow. They're not right at the innovative front of that. So this CellOps is a cloud-based SIEM security platform that allows you to do analytics across a whole bunch of security and compliance monitoring. So when you have firewalls, you need to log the data, collect the events, analyze them, and then you probably want to have some sort of quasi-forensic capability to play them back. So the days of firewall as your security policy are well past us. What we're now seeing is that firewalls are well placed in the network to be gateways for cloud-based services. So as your traffic goes through the firewall, you can start to use the box itself to do analysis for intrusion detection, malware extraction, malware injection, data extraction, you know, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But they also can start exporting data out to cloud services, where they can start to do cloud-based analysis. So now, you know, Fortinet's got critical mass, it's got thousands of customers, and if they're all sending data into a centralized cloud platform and then doing machine learning on that data, they can start to dynamically identify new and emergent threats and be much more valuable to their customers. Now, so this pathway is well-worn. F5, Palo Alto, Cisco's firewall, the next-generation firewall product that they acquired a while back. The list is endless. Riverbed does it as well. Citrix has the same cloud-based security engines. They're all doing it. So this is, in a sense, Fortinet's reacting to the market transition and following by acquiring this very late on. And that's good to see because a lot of Fortinet's becoming very popular with a bunch of people.
That's right. And a cloud-based product, it also generates subscription revenue, which helps smooth out your company's revenue over the long term, moves you toward a more service model, which a lot of folks are doing. Just a quick note, Fortinet apparently paid $28 million for a CellOps, and there's a potential of $4 million more based on company performance.
One of the things that strikes me here is I wonder if we're going to see subscription fatigue in enterprise IT. I don't know if you've – I was talking to somebody this week and they've got a real purchasing problem now because they actually don't know what they're buying. They have all of these monthly licensing fees that go out the door, and they don't have a process to track them all. Mm. And neither does the purchasing department. The idea of renting stuff for enterprises, they can pay rent on a building – but they signed a 5-year or a 10-year lease on that. So that's all, you know, entered into the system. This idea of renting stuff is foreign to most companies. And they're starting to find genuine trouble with accounting for all of the licenses, matching them up to what they're being used for. Are we being charged the right amount and that sort of stuff? So we know that subscription licensing and software licensing revenue that this recurs every month or every quarter is very popular with the vendors, and they call it out in their financial reports. Those public companies are calling it out. But I do also wonder if customers are starting to say, you know, they've got a problem in managing that. And I just wonder, I wouldn't want to be somebody, a network architect who's going, I've got one of them and one of them, and that costs this much per month. And then here's the invoice. And then reconciling an invoice every month is like, oh my God.
Right. Yes. Right. I don't know. Maybe there's a subscription-based service that will come along to help you with your subscription-based services.
Almost guaranteed. You can.
So you pulled out a story from Microsemi. They're introducing Ocelot, which is a switch designed for the industrial side.
We often talk about the big irons, you know, the Broadcoms and the Caviums about their silicon. And then last week we talked about Mellanox and their custom silicon. They have their own switching silicon and so forth. And I sort of keep an eye on the silicon market. And this is from a company called Microsemi. They've released a new chipset called Ocelot, which is focused at a very different sort of a market. And I got a briefing from them, and I just wanted to flag it to you, in that this is a small form factor, low-port Ethernet switch optimized for industrial IoT. So instead of, you know, Tomahawk or the Arista Jericho that we talked about at the front, these things have got like 8 ports.
That's very small.
And they're all 1 gig. They've got two SFPs for 10 gig/1 gig uplinks, and away you went. But what is interesting about these is that they have a bunch of features in there that are dedicated for this IoT stuff. So a lot of them have power over Ethernet, so these things can be powered by power over Ethernet, or they can supply power. Mm-hmm. They're tiny. They're like the size of a little tiny Raspberry Pi type thing. They have flexible. They boot with an operating system on board, or you can put your own operating system on them. And I just think this is a whole emergent market just starting to come to market. Interesting to see these, and they come in different packages. Like there's one which is just 4 copper ports and 1 2.5 gig, and it can go onto a board. And then there's other ones which are actually can be welded into complete switching infrastructure. So the pieces that sit behind IoT networking devices, like these silicon chipsets, and this is all using MIPS processors at the moment, which I find a little bit odd. But then I asked them, why are they using MIPS processors? And they said, because that's what everybody uses in this market today. Huh. And I said, well, what about ARM and Linux? And they said, well, you know, we're seeing some demand for that, but it hasn't happened yet. Linux in the industrial market, maybe it's a new thing.
More territory for Linux to conquer?
Well, I think so, because a lot of these people run MIPS CPUs and they run custom operating systems on top. Well, not custom, but, you know, niche or dedicated custom, maybe things like QNX or something like that on them. But these processors are very low cost. They fundamentally work for programmable logic controllers and motor drive controllers even. So if you want more information about that, go over to Microsemi's website and get some details. It's worth having a bit of a poke and a prod. It's quite entertaining.
And it makes a lot of sense if we're talking about IoT and industrial, you know, if you're out at an oil rig or something that's got a lot of sensors on it, you need to get that data back somewhere. Having a small purpose-built switch for that purpose makes sense.
Yeah, and you can't use Wi-Fi a lot in a lot of these applications because distance or because reliability is key. You need to have that dedicated cable between the end nodes. Although we'd all like to get Wi-Fi, a lot of these machines generate electrical interference.
That's also how I'm big, sure.
Usually, when you put a sensor on a big electrical motor that's got these brushes that are like the size of a car tire, you just, you know, yeah, it's not work. So, yeah, I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. There's a whole bunch of innovation bubbling away at a level that we don't know about yet in the enterprise IT. And I just thought that was interesting.
All right, we'll have a link in the show notes. This is our final bit of news. You know, when I was a kid, I was convinced that the future meant flying cars, and so far I've been grossly disappointed. But a story in the Las Vegas Review-Journal reports that Nevada is allowing a Chinese company to test a passenger-carrying drone in the state. The Chinese company is called Ehang. I'm not sure about the name, but it's working with the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems, which is a nonprofit backed by the state's Office of Economic Development. I think this is really amazing. It's one of those kind of knocked me over developments. Like, okay, wow. We have to go to Las Vegas a lot for tech conferences. If I could, you know, hop into a flying drone to get from one hotel to the other, that would just be cool.
I'm not so sure about cool. That would be like very bizarre. I'm not sure if I'd try.
That's the future.
It might be the future, but do you know what? There's so much that can go wrong in flying. You know, like working in three dimensions, and like if this thing is 200 feet off the ground and something goes wrong and it lands, you know, and it comes into the ground with a bang, you're not going to come walk away from that. Like, I'm not.
Well, I assume it will come with an emergency jetpack.
At 200 meters up, because they're not going to let you fly much higher than that. You know, you're going to let the jetpack's not going to help. You're going to go in head first, most likely.
I know. It's still very problematic. Lots of issues to work out.
I can get very casual about my personal well-being from time to time and take risks that a lot of people won't. Right. But I'm not entirely sure that a passenger-carrying airborne drone is going to be there for me. I think I'll wait. Maybe I'll skip this particular innovation.
That's not the dice you want to throw.
No, that's not what I'd willingly choose.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of
I'll Network Watch You Break. Fall Out of the Sky.
That's right. That's right. You'll have to find a new co-host.
You'll die happy, and it'll be worth it to watch it happening. I'll record it, put it on YouTube.
Awesome. I appreciate that. My legacy.
Yeah, that's it.
People are interested in hearing more from you, Greg. Where can they get it?
They can find me on my blog at ethereum1.com, on the Twitters, and on Facebook and LinkedIn.
And I'm Drew Conry Murray. I blog at packetpusher.net, and you can find me on Twitter at Drew_CM. Thanks to our sponsors, IT Pro TV and Thousand Eyes. And thank you for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook or leave a recommendation on iTunes or share it with your friends. And you can also check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. All of the links are available at packetpusher.net. Thanks for listening.